Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
We're going to kick the night off with having Mom light the Shabbat candles. I really appreciate, you know, as always, the environment being set and people sending us into service the way that Megan just did, signifying entering his rest with the lighting of the Shabbat candles. It's all preparation for what we're stepping into and rehearsing and just the things that Yahweh is asking us to govern and to learn how to do that. So really appreciate all of those things. Before we read our Torah portion tonight, I just, as usual, had a couple of things to say. Last week, if you notice over the past several weeks or maybe since we've been doing Torah portions, we kind of have an introduction. And what I would say that introduction is kind of a parallel teaching, a brief teaching to the Torah portion to posture us right, get our minds right, maybe equip or impart something so that we can better enter in to receive the Torah portion. Last week, we talked about discomfort. Was everybody here?
Yeah.
We talked about how discomfort used to be, for the most part, I would say, for most people, the guidepost or the supreme kind of determining factor of whether you would engage in something or not is how uncomfortable it made you and why you should stay away from that thing. It kind of became the reason why you would disengage. Whereas now, Yahweh is the way that he is, and the way that he's calling us to follow him is to fully embrace discomfort, because that is the beginning of being set apart to him. Right?
Yeah.
So I want to add to that progression tonight and add to our understanding of kind of how we're, what we're being confronted with and the things that we're encountering on this path, in this process. We're coming up against extreme discomfort in a lot of ways because Yahweh's unraveling things we've known or been used to our entire life, right? Our own understanding, things we've never second-guessed, things we've never really thought about. It's just been things we've accepted and walked out. And so for a lot of us, as, you know, grown adults, it's even harder because it's been even more deeply ingrained. So I feel like it's important to understand as a family how we orient ourselves as we're being read by the Torah. What is the best way we can orient ourselves so that we can apply these things to our life without resisting him taking that seat?
Yeah.
So to add another layer to what I talked about last week, when we're talking about the dynamic of Egypt and being liberated from Egypt, we're talking about a dynamic of oppression and freedom. Okay? A lot of where the victimhood mentality is rooted in is actually a freedom problem. Because freedom demands ownership and responsibility and hard work, going through the process, and that freedom, the consequences of the freedom or what you do with that freedom rests squarely on your shoulders. When you're oppressed, it's easy to use oppression as an excuse that I'm subject to.
Yeah, that's good.
Victimhood is really, when you boil it down to something, victimhood is an attitude of I am subject to something to where I cannot make my own decisions, do what I want to do. And while people cry out for that, when they're presented with freedom, an opportunity for freedom, which is what Yahweh has been presenting us with, is an invitation to be liberated to be free in Him. A lot of us, because of that victimhood mentality, and I'm not saying it as this big bad thing, think of it as victimhood means I am constantly subject to something, which means I cannot fulfill what I'm being asked to do. But once you're liberated and that oppression lifts, now you have a freedom problem. And a lot of times what somebody operating out of that victimhood will do is to reinvent or manufacture to resuscitate or revive the oppression. Fabricating a false oppression. No, I'm still subject to. That's why I can't be responsible. That's why you can't expect me to fully own what I can, what I am now fully capable of owning, because I'm in a state of liberation. I want to add that layer, because last week we talked about discomfort. That's just one aspect of this whole process. I believe really when it comes down to it, and you're dealing with victimhood and oppression lifting and people being liberated, and you will begin to see it as you engage in a way that you're flinging wide prison gates in people's lives, all of a sudden that's, you'll find out why they would like to go back. Because freedom is a problem. Right? And I just really felt stirred about that, because I felt almost as if speaking that truth can, it has the authority to break off that victimhood mindset, because you're not understanding what's going on and why you can't overcome that. It's because there's a fear of freedom. He is bringing us into a place of wide open freedom, which means the heft or the mutual engaging or the mutual action in the relationship that we're called to with Him, your half of that responsibility is on your shoulders. Yours. Not the pastor, not the minister, not the somebody who gave you a word you didn't like, not the, whatever, not all the things that you could have claimed you were subject to before. Right? So I just want to say that as a parallel impartation, so that we can really position ourselves to embrace what it means to be free. And by the way, the other thing I talked about last week was, I think it was last week, remember when I said spectrum? Mom comes in here and she'll teach on the Torah portion in a certain fashion, but what many of you don't see is the place where she abides is a place of joy. It's a well of joy that can be tapped, that any of us can tap into. And I would challenge you guys tonight to draw from that place as she's teaching tonight, because it is a deep place of joy in the midst of being liberated from oppression. Right? We need to switch our minds from being scared of freedom to just fully embracing it. That's how you breathe underwater. You can't fight it. Right? So I want to challenge all of you guys to draw on that well. Draw on the teaching tonight. There's going to be a lot. Interact, engage, voice, you know, whatever the Spirit is doing in you. Okay? Amen? All right. Sean's going to come up, read our Torah portion tonight.
And Adonai said to Moses, "Go to Pharaoh, because I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, so that I might show these my signs in their midst. And so you may tell your son and your grandchildren what I have done in Egypt, as well as my signs that I did among them, so you may know that I am Adonai." So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and said to him, "This is what Adonai, the God of the Hebrews, says: How long would you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go, so they may serve me. Or else, if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I will bring locusts into your borders. Then they will cover the face of the earth, so that no one will be able to see the ground. They will eat the remainder of what escaped, whatever is left from the hail, and eat every tree that grows for you out in the field. Your houses will be filled as with as will the houses of your of all your servants and the houses of all the Egyptians, as neither your fathers nor your grandfathers have seen since the day they were on earth until today. Then he turned and went out from Pharaoh. Pharaoh's servants said to him, "How long will this man be a snare to us? Send the men so they may serve Adonai their God. Don't you realize yet that Egypt is being destroyed?" So Moses and Aaron were brought to Pharaoh again. "Go serve Adonai your God," he said. "But who will be going?" Moses answered, "We will go with our young and our elderly, our sons and our daughters. We will go with our flocks and our herds, for we must have Adonai's peace for him." But he said to them, "So may Adonai be with you. If I ever do let you go with your little ones, see clearly now, evil is in your face. Go now, the men, and serve Adonai, for that's what you were seeking." Then they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. And Adonai said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, so they may come up onto Egypt and eat every plant in the land, everything the hail has left." So Moses stretched out his staff over the land of Egypt, and Adonai brought an east wind over the land all that day and all night. When it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. The locusts came up over all the land of Egypt and rested on the entire territory of Egypt. So dense there was nothing like it before them, nor will there ever be again. For they covered the face of the whole earth so that the land was darkened, and they ate every plant in the land and all the fruit from the trees that the hail had left. No green thing remains, not a tree or a plant of the field throughout all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh quickly called for Moses and Aaron and said, "I have sinned against Adonai your God and against you. Now forgive my sin only this once, please. So pray to Adonai your God, just so he would take this death away from me." So he went out from Pharaoh and prayed to Adonai. Then Adonai turned the wind from the west very strong, and it carried off the locusts and drove them into the Sea of Reeds. Not one locust remained in all the territory of Egypt. But Adonai hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let Bnei Israel go. And Adonai said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand toward heaven, and there will be darkness over the land of Egypt, a darkness that may be felt." So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days. They could not see one another, nor could anyone rise from his place for 3 days. Yet all Bnei Israel had light within their dwellings. Pharaoh called Moses and said, "Go serve Adonai. Only let your flocks and your herds remain. Your little ones may also go with you." But Moses said, "You must also put sacrifices and burnt offerings into our hand. Then we will do it for Adonai our God. Our cattle must also go with us. Not a hoof may be left behind. We must take from them to serve Adonai our God. We ourselves will not know how we will serve Adonai until we arrive there." Adonai hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he was unwilling to let him go. So Pharaoh said to him, "Go away from me. Take heed never to see my face again, because on the day you do, you will die." "Right," Moses said, "you said it. May I never see your face again." Now Adonai said to Moses, "I will bring one more plague upon Pharaoh and on Egypt. After that, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely thrust you out altogether from here. Speak now into the ears of the people, and let every man ask from his neighbor and every woman from her neighbor for articles of silver and gold." Adonai gave the people favor in the eyes of the Egyptians. Indeed, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the eyes of Pharaoh's servants, and in the eyes of the people. So Moses said, "This is what Adonai says: at around midnight, I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt will die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh sitting on his throne to the firstborn of the maid servant behind the mill. Along with all the firstborn cattle, there will be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, the likes of which has never been before, nor will ever be again. But not so much as a dog will growl against any of Bnei Israel, neither man nor beast, so that you may know that Adonai makes a distinction between the Egyptians and Israel. All these servants of yours will come down to me and bow down to me, saying, 'Get out, you and all the people who follow you.' After that, I will go." Then we went out from Pharaoh, your Adonai, had said to Moses, Pharaoh will not listen to you so that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. So Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, yet Adonai hardened Pharaoh's heart, so he did not let Bnei Israel go out of his land. Now Adonai spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month will mark the beginning for you. It is to be the first month of the year for you. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb for his family, one lamb for the household. But if the household is too small for a lamb, and he and his nearest neighbor are to take one according to the number of the people, according to each person eating. You are to make your count for the lamb. Your lamb is to be without blemish, a year old male. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. You must watch over it until the 14th day of this month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel is to slaughter it at twilight. They are to take the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the crossbeam of the houses where they will eat. They are to eat the meat that night roasted over a fire with matzah and bitter herbs. They are to eat it. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled with water, but only roasted with fire, its head with its legs in its innards. So let nothing of it remain until the morning. Whatever remains until the morning, you are to burn with fire. Also, you are to eat it this way, with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand. You are to eat it in haste. It is Adonai Passover, for I will go through the land of Egypt on that night and strike down every firstborn, both men and animals, and I will execute judgment against all the gods of Egypt. I am Adonai.
I think it's always amazing, Yahweh's timing. We're about to enter into Tabernacles, and we're in Pesach. But remember how I've talked about with the feast, how they arc. So there's an arcing that's happening for us to understand Tabernacles. He needs us to read this now. I think Megan said full circle. What was the main statement that you said, Megan?
Which one?
Tonight. Like about he's not, he's...
His seat?
Yes.
That he's reclaiming his seat.
He's reclaiming his seat. She has no idea what I'm preaching on tonight. And probably the best way to say... He is reclaiming his authority. He is reclaiming his seat. And I had asked everyone, you know, to be on time and to be here because I just feel like there's a lot. And I recognize that not everything that is able to be written down or fully comprehended, but we have tools to be able to go back and dissect it. So I need the grace and the to don't oppose the quickness, because it's not that I'm trying to fit it all in, but his timing is important. And so it's not like we're gonna get into all of that, but by the spirit of what even was released in the Torah portion, you need to eat it in an evening. And so to dine on all of it, the things that he has revealed is going to be dispensed. So just plan to stuff yourself. Just plan to be completely and totally and utterly stuffed. So, and I say this all the time, I don't know to what order things are going to come. I don't necessarily know exactly all of what is going to come out, but I just know that there is a lot. There was a lot in this Torah portion, and one of the things that I feel released in tonight is to release some depth. Gabe didn't know. Like I will teach on a couple of things that came out of the Torah portion, like just some kind of fun facts and just some things for us to know. But there is a depth, and then I would go deeper, and then he would take it deeper, and then I was like, how deep can we sustain in one evening? And this is night one on the word of learn to breathe in a deep place.
Yeah.
So I'm a little like shaky in the sense of nervousness of that word of learning to breathe in a deep place, because there is multiple. I'm just going to release a couple things to just kind of prepare us. It says in the scriptures that you are seated in what? Heavenly what? Place? So let's say that again. You are seated in a heavenly place? No. You are seated in heavenly places. Which means you are a multiple being. So you are going to learn to read and be read multidimensional. That's what that means when I talk about multidimensional, is that he wants to teach us that there are some things that we've been taught in a singular perspective, and he is not a singular being. You guys know what I mean when I say that?
Yes.
Because we understand Ichad, we understand unity, but there is some things that have been robbed from us that say that he is shallow and there is not depth. And like Gabe said, if we are created in his image, then you are not shallow. You do have the ability to go deep. You are not dumb. You are not deaf. This is a deep place, and he's going to release from that place. And if deep is calling unto deep, you're going to receive the depth. So in him, you are an old thing. In him you are a new what?
Creation.
Okay, think about that. Don't just read a scripture and say cute. If you're science, if I take you out of a religious box for just a second, and I'm a teacher, and I said, therefore, in him you are a new creation, you're gonna hear that differently.
Yeah.
If I was a science teacher and I said you are a new creation,
yeah,
you're not going to receive it like a religious person. So don't receive me from a religious box. You are a new creature. You are not human. Fine?
Yeah, fine.
It's a scripture. You are a new creation. One more layer of just some depth on the new creation. Adam. Adam. Break that down. Ah, Abba, Father. Dom, blood. You are of his blood.
Yes.
You were created in his image. The very name of Adam is being of his blood. You are him manifested on earth. That's Adam. So when the Messiah comes and he says, and in him you are a new creation, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Here's my title. I am continued. That in itself should be powerful, because we already know that the revelation of I am is being continued. It wasn't a week that you just got to, just have to get it and then you're just done if you missed it. I am is being continued. Now, another part of tonight, granted, there's kind of a lot of parts tonight. This title came in the beginning, and then he took me deep. So there might be a lot of titles that come from this. But where I was before we went deep, which we are going to go there, is Pesach. How deep can we go? Before we talk about Pesach, I want to review some things. This is something that hasn't necessarily been released yet, so this is why I want to review in this way. Meaning a lot of tonight, I actually want to go over and release some depth on the plates. There, we have an opportunity here to understand some things just even in hosting. Because we host by Torah portion sections, something it happens in that hosting section that he's after. So just even shifting from John to Gabe, there was all of the plagues. There were how many? Seven. Up until posting. Tonight, yeah, we get the other three.
Yeah.
Even that means something.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to get into it, but all of this means there's a reason why these plagues are separated, is my point. There's a reason why the Torah portion has shifted and transitioned. So before I move into that transition, I feel like I want to dive deep into the plagues. Okay?
Okay.
And before I think I want to do that. Pesach first or plague?
Plague.
Okay. Before I do that, I want to release what has already been released to us. If we haven't caught it, you've caught it by the Spirit, but I'm going to write it out or I'm going to speak it out. What so far Exodus is the revealing of I am. All this is all about who he is in our lives.
Yeah.
So when she's talking about how he's trying to take his seat, he's reintroducing himself in who he is in our lives. And almost each chapter is a new aspect of who he is in I am. I am is foundational. I am is action.
Yeah.
So we can add to that. So this is the beginning of Exodus. I am present in your suffering. I didn't break this down by chapter. Sometimes it's chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3. Sometimes it's 3, 4, 5. You know, some of the Torah portions are together. I am present in your suffering. I am your deliverer. I am your God. I am your calling. I am confronts evil. I am your encouragement. I am God alone. To this Torah portion, I am your Passover. We're only up to chapter 12. I'm going to just go over a little bit of what's coming, and I only got to chapter 21. How many chapters are in Exodus? Anyone?
40.
Okay, so I'm only on chapter 21. The next portions are, I am your freedom. Weird. I heard that totally different. I am your freedom means it's very easy for us to not only, sometimes it's literal, you want to go back to being subject to, or you just blame Yahweh for being subject to him, and now he becomes Pharaoh.
Yeah.
So you don't see him correctly, so he has to reestablish a seat because we've become a victim to Yahweh because we're associating him like Pharaoh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's hard to be a partner. It's easy to be oppressed. So we blame our partner. When I'm being called to partner, it's much easier to blame a partner to say, well, you did this to me.
Yeah.
Is it not easier to do that?
Yeah.
If I have to take responsibility and be a partner, then it's easy for me to associate whatever I'm oppressed by because something else is oppressing me and be like, you oppress me.
Right.
That's not true. Something is oppressing me. He is not oppressing me.
Right.
This is where partnership is. He then has to be put in a position to reestablish his authority in my life.
Yeah.
He has to remind me, I am not your oppressor.
Yeah.
He has to take authority, and I've got to partner with that.
Mm-hmm.
Amen? So yes. I am your freedom. I am your defender. I am your song. I am your provider. I am your banner. I am your leader. I am revealed. I am the Lord who speaks. I am your law. I am your fear. I am your justice. That's only to chapter 21. There's an I am all the way up to chapter 40. Who talked about confrontation? You, Megan. That's why it feels confronting. Because if he comes to me and says, I am, and it'll confront what I think he is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's been up to this point. Tonight, we're going to go over I am your Passover. We're going to go over a lot. All of Exodus is revealing who he is to his people. And I do want to say this. When you have been in a system for so long, especially generationally, talking about Israel, he's going to take his time to reveal who he is. It's 40 chapters in Exodus. He's taking time to reveal who he is. We talked about this with the maturity of Moshe, where you've got him in the beginning of saying, why didn't it work the first time I talked to Pharaoh? Because there's a lot more to Yahweh than just one revelation. That's why. So when you're told to do something and it doesn't work right away,
yeah,
it's because there's another revelation of who he is. And you would be shortchanging yourself if it just worked, because he knows who you are.
Yeah.
If it works, you just stop. We're good to go.
Yeah.
So he continues. Okay. I'll just kind of start. I'm going to start off with just a couple of things with this Torah portion, and then we'll head into the plagues. Does that sound okay? In this Torah portion, I mean, it was pretty self-explanatory in the reading, but we see Pharaoh's heart hardened again. So we've been talking about that. He's after the heart being hardened. And we see in the last portions that Yahweh has hardened his heart, but we know that 6 or 7 times prior to that, he chose to harden his heart. And so the revelation from that is not just so much that Yahweh will eventually hand you over to that, but the point is that Yahweh does not harden anyone that didn't first choose to be hard.
Right.
A good person who wants to be obedient and say, no, that's just not going to happen. That's not how that works. He is sovereign, but he's good. Okay? So we see in this Torah portion a continued hardened heart, which essentially is pride. We see pride. We see in this Torah portion that even the servants, if you guys remember, I think it was the last Torah portion, the servants were hard as well. They both got hard. In this Torah portion, even the servants flip.
Yeah.
They're acknowledging something's going on here, and they flip. So even Pharaoh, even the servants of Pharaoh are beginning to flip. And you still see Pharaoh say, no. You still see that level of hardness. We see compromise and bargaining again.
Yep.
You guys, you know, catch that. We talked about that last week, so I don't feel like I need to teach on it again. But there's a level of him asking them to compromise. And once again, Moshe was like, no, even the animals need to come with, right? There's this. Now, when we get into what the plagues were doing, you are going to honor Moshe's obedience to stand firm in the midst of compromise. We're gonna get into it, but at the end of the Torah portion, it says not one hoof is going to be left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, any of you that are looking at this very superficially and say, well, I don't have a whole lot of cattle. The hoof in you is what I'm after tonight.
Yeah.
Not one hoof that has been given over to another system or a demon or a religious system. Not one aspect is going to be left in that system.
Yeah.
Now that system's going to say, we're going to compromise. How about you give me this? How about you give me your time? How about you give me your, well, but I'd like to keep my food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's Moshe, a leader, saying not one hoof is going to be left in that system.
Yeah.
It's all coming out.
Yeah.
It's good.
Okay. So.
Amen.
So good. And we see Yahweh he gives Pharaoh instructions of how to get out of all this.
Yeah.
This is how good he is.
Yeah.
I get so tired of seeing anti-Torah releasing he's a genocide of Yahweh. And I'm like, he is He even gives instructions to Pharaoh on how to get out of this.
Yeah.
And it's a no. And so, but see how easy we can blame in that partnership. Mm-hmm. I keep saying no, and the first thing I blame is the way out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we see compromise and bargaining. Now, when I say that, again, a little bit deeper, when I talk about compromise and bargaining, I'm talking about when we say the word compromise, it means it's a way to give in to God without fully submitting. It's a way to give in to him without giving it at all. That's what that compromise is. Because Pharaoh said, you can go, mm-hmm. even your little one, but not this. Right? Like it's a partial submission. It's a partial surrender.
Yeah.
But it is a surrender. That's what's so scary about that.
Yeah.
It's not just this outright, you're not going. It's like what Gabe was talking about. Now does that make sense? It's like you can either not surrender and be super hard, or you can fully surrender, which would be fully soft, and then you've got this in between where you're trying to surrender but not going to surrender all of it. Yeah. That's what compromise is. Yeah. And in this Torah portion, it says not one aspect of that compromise or bargaining was going to be allowed. All of it has to go. Let me see if there's something else. Another thing that was pointed out to me is I'm trying to think of how to say this. Some of this is going to snap into place once we go deeper. Because it's obvious when you read the Torah portion, but it's not obvious when you read it in you. But one of the things that was pointed out to me is this concept of how easy it would be to say, what's the difference? What's the difference between the God of the Nile and Yahweh? I don't know how to explain that. When I talk about the plagues personally, it'll start to kind of click, but there's this, what does it matter? Just let Israel do this, let Egypt do this. Like, what does it matter? A God is a God, right? Because there's this battle. Yahweh is clearly, in these Torah portions and through the plagues, saying, oh, there is a difference.
Yeah.
Does that make... Yeah, he is making himself known. Yeah. There is no competition with Yahweh, is what I'm saying. Pharaoh is, at one point, threatens him. Oh, you're going to need your God if I let you go. That's how pompous and arrogant he is with his gods and himself being a god. Pharaoh actually is a god in Egypt, son of a god. We're going to get into that. But because he is a god, he is, after all that, which you'd think like, how stupid. But guys, after all that he's done, he makes himself so obvious. And we'll still be like, you're gonna need Adonai to help you on that, or whatever. You know what I mean? So this thought of like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Yahweh is like, let me show you what a big deal this is.
Yeah.
Because I will trump this. I will trump this. I will trump this. I will trump this all the way down to, I'm gonna reverse everything.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. You guys said plagues first, right? Yes. Before Pesach. Okay. So that's kind of all that I really had as far as like the actual Torah portion.
I got a question. Going back to what Jason was saying earlier, am I right in assuming that what you're giving is almost like being institutionalized, like from a criminal? Is in an institution for so many years that when he's free, he doesn't know how to act outside of that. And usually they return back to crime so that they can put themselves back into a familiar area, like where they're at. Because that's where they live. So is that kind of paralleling what you're saying? Just from my own
Exactly.
Exactly. Totally.
What's that word called? You use it all the time.
Recidivism.
Oh. Recidivism?
Yeah. Like recidivism rates is the rate at which people return to incarceration. But yes, exactly what you're saying. That's a great example.
I know that way early from tonight.
It's all right.
That's where I'm at, slowly absorbing.
It's okay. It's good because I want to remind us, I've talked a lot about how Faro is a system, right? There's an aspect of prison that's pretty good. They get a meal. They got workout rooms. They can deal and they do drugs and have sex. And I mean, it's a pretty good system. I mean, I wouldn't want to be there, but I can see why. Anyway, so I've been saying how Faro's a system. I'm going to describe it a little bit different tonight because this is what institutionalization is, what's happening. Faro is misrepresenting the rule and character of God.
Yeah.
Egypt, in this system, represents the height of corruption and rebellion, partnered with spiritual rebellion. This isn't just a system. This is demonic. This is a pagan, demonic system.
Yeah.
Don't forget and make this story just an ancient story.
Yeah, yeah.
He killed every firstborn Hebrew and threw him in the water.
Yeah.
Drowned him.
Come on.
The Nile was filled with dead babies because he wanted to show that he's God. That's that God. There was no strategy. There was no way out. There was no distinction. There was no rhyme or reason. It was all pride, self-promotion. It was fear-based. It was, I don't want these people to keep going. It was all, remember, for me versus I am for you. Yahweh kills some firstborns, but he gives strategy. He gives the blood.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to get into Pesach. He gives you everything. He gives you everything, but that does not mean that he is a fluffy cloud.
Yeah.
Allowing pagan gods to rule and reign and take out all of his little ones.
Yeah, come on.
He is going to stand up and he is going to bring justice. And he is going to bring distinction between that which attacks you and your family, and he's going to bring you into protection. It is time for us as a people to stop opposing as a problem.
Yep. Yeah.
He is trying to get the problem off of you and bring you into protection. And we are fighting the one as if he's...
Yeah, come on.
You've been under Pharaoh, who has given you nothing.
Come on.
Yahweh is coming in and saying, I am done with the demons over your life, and I am bringing you into protection.
Yeah.
And we're too busy fighting Yahweh thinking he's Pharaoh. Okay? So, plagues. Because we have got to understand his character. When you hear the story of just, and then he sent locusts, and then he did this, and then he did that, He was doing some things. How many of us would love to have locusts devour? Now, the reason why we fight him is because maybe we're the ones getting devoured. That's why the distinction is happening. Okay, so there are three ways that I want to break down the plagues. So we're going to go three layers deep. I am not necessarily going to teach specifically on each one, but I want you to just, if you get anything from this, Dwayne, if you don't absorb all of it, if all I can do tonight is to release you into there is greater dimension to darkness. There's a greater dimension to lice. It's not just a history story.
Right. Yeah.
If that's all that you get out, I'm going to release some depth and some details, and it's going to get, I don't want to say muddy, but it's a lot. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about that. Just receive that there is more to this than a history lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Torah is a blueprint,
mm-hmm.
And if Torah is instructions for our now, then that means the lice means something.
Right.
Because if Yahweh is a God who's after the Egyptian God, which is a pagan God, and I personalize it, then that means that there is a God in my life that he's trying to send something to get rid of it.
Right. Yeah.
So we're learning what is it that he's after. How many of us want to know what he's after versus just, oh, that's weird. Yeah. Lice was all over.
Yeah.
What is it then in my life that he's, what is it that he's doing? So we're gonna do this in three different ways. The first thing that I want to release is that the plagues up until this point, first of all, are a direct, I don't want to say encounter. It's a direct counter, sorry. A direct counter to Exodus 1. This is all a direct response to Pharaoh over his people. So the context of this whole story is Yahweh saying, it is time for me to stand over this system and free my people. Because it's in direct relationship to the final straw of Pharaoh forgetting what Joseph had done killing his babies.
Yeah.
That he said, enough's enough.
Yeah.
The prophecy is up. It's been 400 years. Let's do this.
Yeah.
So that's the context of this. That means when you've been in a demonic system for generations, there comes a point where the prophetic timeline is up.
Yeah.
And he comes into your life and says, I have had enough.
Yep.
Because now the generation has died off.
Yep.
The
yep.
next generation is now being killed.
Yeah.
So I am stepping in and I am going to start a process that is not going to feel good, but I'm going to be bringing a distinction between you and that system, and I'm going to bring you out.
Yep.
That sound like some transitionaries?
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a prophetic amount of time as transitionaries, where he says, time is up. Mm-hmm. Church era over.
Yeah.
Yep. Transition into a new thing.
Yep. Yeah.
So time is up. So I am going to speak to some things that have gotten to a point where the generations are dying.
Come
on. So I'm going to step in and I'm going to begin a process of releasing my power and reestablishing my authority. Just like I would assume we would want Yeshua to just come in and kick the dirt and call it good. Yahweh's got this crazy way of freeing you. Like, why didn't he just...
Yeah.
Because he's establishing some his character.
Yeah.
He's making himself known. Not just to his people, but to that system.
Yeah.
He's not just whispering in Israel being like, hey, out the back door.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
On the back door.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's good.
He is a God that will stand up to the things over your life and make himself known, not to you, to it.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to make himself known to the demons in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Not just you. That's what I'm saying. That's why it doesn't need to be about you. He wants to talk to the thing that's been bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
And we are so busy being like, be my daddy. And he's like, I got some things to say to the thing that's been your father. I'm not concerned with you yet. We'll get to that in the wilderness. For right now, I've got a Pharaoh to talk to. So if you're feeling like he's not talking to me or I can't hear him, wait till we'll get to the wilderness. Let him deal with the things that you've been living in.
Yeah.
Amen?
Yeah.
All right. Plagues. First layer. Sorry. The first layer. Up until this point, the plagues are addressing Genesis 1. Because of the blood, Yahweh is stepping in and doing some things on the earth that I will call decreation. This is not abnormal. We saw it with Noah. When he's had enough, He will reverse what he created and decreate to bring that system back to a place of utter void and chaos.
Yeah.
So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
In Genesis, there are 7 days that he created. Yes?
Yeah.
But when you look at Genesis, if you outline it, and you can do this, you outline it, there are 10 statements that he speaks creation. 10. And there are 10 plagues. For every act of creation, the plagues are decreating in order to bring them back to the original intent and to show Egypt that I'm going to bring you back to a place of void. He is way bigger than a god of lice.
Yeah,
right. He's doing some things with the frogs.
Right, yeah.
I'm talking about frogs, I'll talk about frogs. In the days of creation, he separates land from water. What's happening with the frogs that live both in land and water? He's bringing utter chaos and no separation between land and water. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Each plague is a direct decreation of creation. Dust.
Yeah.
He throws dust and it makes gnats. Lice is another word. Gnats are not flies yet, but gnats are lice. Think about it. He created life out of dust, and then he takes dust and he's giving something that is eating on death. Does this show you the Yahweh that we serve that wants to deal with the things over your life?
Yeah.
And he's that kind of God that will decreate. If you've created a system or a world or he'll decreate it.
Right.
Yeah. That's good.
Okay. Flies. What does Genesis 1 say? Genesis 2. Be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah.
It's a swarm of flies. And it's very interesting, the author, so crazy, Moshe is the author, right? He writes this in such a way, if you really dig into it, the same verbiage is used in Genesis. To say, I mean, be fruitful, multiply. If you go in and you look at the language, it's written out a lot like Genesis 1 and 2. We're good?
Mm-hmm.
More than a history story.
Yeah.
That's all you got. That's it. All right. I said I was going to do this in 3 different ways. You guys ready for the second one? Are we doing okay?
Yeah.
We've already talked about this, and let me just take you through my process. We talked about this, so what I decided to do was plagues, and then I wrote out the god or goddess that he was attacking. I wrote that out next to it. As I started to write this out personally, I started to feel by the Spirit to ask questions, and I was personalizing the goddess. Meaning, if he's attacking a goddess in this system, then I want to know what goddess or god has that authority or seat in my life that he's trying to get at. If that makes, that's where all of this started. So this part is a little bit more, I wouldn't say personal, but what I was just hearing by the Spirit, then that led me into another layer of depth. So, just so you guys kind of know the progression. He is definitely trying to show that he is greater than the gods and goddesses of the system. Which, again, not a history story. He is greater than whatever god you've put in your life.
Right.
Yeah. Whatever god that you've been serving. Whatever goddess that you have trusted.
Yeah.
If you have not trusted Yahweh, there is something you've trusted in. How about the goddess of money?
Yeah.
If it isn't him, it could be something else. Insert the god of money.
Yeah.
Right? Don't get weird when I say the goddess of Hathor. You might not know who Hathor is.
Yeah.
Maybe Hathor is your food.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What is it that you're trusting in? Medication?
Yeah.
Banking system.
Mm-hmm.
Friends. Family. Grocery stores. I mean, the list goes on, right? So we're just going to talk about the actual god and goddesses of Egypt, and then I'll just kind of say personally what I was hearing in them. So, makes sense. Okay. You'll understand when I get to the third one, because the third one is, like, pretty, like, pointed. And I was like, oh, I was kind of off in my personal side, but I still think it's good. All right. First plague. Was he turned the water to blood, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were three gods and goddesses that he was dealing with just the Nile. So, and I don't know if you guys want to write this down or not. You can find it on Google. If this is pretty easy to find. But he was attacking the guardian of the Nile. He was attacking the spirit of the Nile. And he was attacking the bloodstream of the Nile. So as he basically came in to show that he was the god of the Nile. You guys know, and I think we've talked about this, that the Egyptians worshiped the Nile River itself,
yeah,
and the gods and goddesses that were over that Nile.
Yeah.
So it's a supernatural thing. There was a god and a goddess that would do what it needed to do in the Nile to be able to give them sustenance. So you can take that a step further. What river, what life stream is giving you production or your identity, your confidence, that's what the Nile was. And so he was coming in and saying, oh, you are going to be confident in me and me alone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So he was attacking the god, I don't know how to say his names, but it's the god Nu, the spirit of the Nile, which is the god of happy. Well, not happy. Hoppy. I don't know. H-A-P-I. I don't know how to pronounce these. Huh? Sure. The bloodstream of the Nile, which is the god of Osiris. The frogs is the next plague, right? He was attacking the frog. It's a goddess. Hecht. And it's the goddess of fertility. Now, well, no, never mind. Next one, I just lumped these together. Lice, flies, and livestock are the next three. He was after the god of Hathor, which is a cow-like mother. Remember when one of the night seasons I said, I want,
yep,
what did we say?
Yeah.
I want sacred. All your sacred cows. Well, we did it through lice, flies, and livestock. And then I'll get into that. Then the next one was boils. He was after the god of Imhotep, which is the god of medicine. The next one is Hail, the god of nut. I don't know who would want to serve these gods anyways. They're just weird. That's the sky goddess. Then we're, this Torah portion, we get into Locust, and he's after the god of Osiris again, which is the protector of crops. And then I think I'm going to wait. Well, no, I'm not. Darkness is the next one. This one's good, guys. Because he's after the sun god. But I don't know if we taught on this or not, but the sun god is named Ra, which is Pharaoh is actually a son of the sun god, Ra. So this is in a direct attack now on Pharaoh with darkness. So you can see a progression. Right? Let me say it this way. He's going to deal with where your sustenance comes from.
Yeah.
And if that, he ends up dealing with your identity.
Yeah.
He ends up dealing with what's fathering you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then, if that doesn't work, this is what's scary.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't work, he goes after the generation.
Yeah.
Watch for the progression. If you're fighting on trusting where your production comes from or your confidence comes from.
Yeah.
If it doesn't get dealt with, go down the line all the way to he will deal with what's fathering you, and if that doesn't get dealt with, he'll deal with what you father.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Come on.
Yep.
This is really good.
Yeah.
I know it can be heavy, but it's a blueprint of what, remember though, he's doing it to free his people.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So I'm going to go back through those, and I'm just going to say personally what I was hearing in the spirit of some things that he could be dealing with in those plagues, and then we'll go on to the third thing. You guys all right? So guardian of the Nile, what I heard with that is what is fathering your life? In particular with what the Nile represents. What is influencing would be another way of saying that. What is influencing your confidence? What is influencing your sustenance? The spirit of that would be what is mothering. The bloodstream of that, I think this is good.
Yeah.
He's after the bloodstream of that. What predisposition do you have in your genes that he wants to deal with?
Yeah.
Your bloodline, your bloodstream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where does your blood come from? What are you predisposed to? And if you're a new creation, what is he after when he says, no, I'm the God of that?
Yeah.
So if these don't make sense, these are just kind of a personal thing. Frogs, fertility. Right off the bat, I heard, what are you multiplying?
Yeah.
Which has a lot to do with intimacy.
Yeah.
This is a great setup for the third section. Lice, flies, and livestock, all of those things affected their sacrifice. It affected their sacrificial system. So the question is, what are you worshiping? Or wrong worship?
Yeah.
He's after your worship. Because the livestock, all those things affected the animals and the magicians, but it affected what they sacrificed. It ultimately stopped their sacrificial system because they could not bring an unclean animal forward. Because it had lice on it. So he's after worship and the sacrificial system.
Yeah.
We've been through that.
Yeah.
Boils is the god of medicine, so that was pretty obvious for me. Medicine or body, right?
Yeah.
Boils were on their bodies. You know, what does he want to deal with as far as our flesh and our bodies?
Yeah.
Or in the arena? Hail. What I heard with this is that he's greater than greater. I'm trying to think of how to explain how I felt that, but I don't know. Sky to me is big. Right? So I think about it in the sense of like he is showing not just power over a cow.
Yeah.
He has power over the universe.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that needs to be spoken to, if you trust in something in the sky, but for me it was that he's beyond greater than greater. He is in charge of the seasons and the times and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So I attached environment to that. Locusts, because it's after the god of protector of the crops, food. He's going to deal with whatever gods. I mean, to some of us, food itself can be a god.
Yeah.
It is our livelihood. It is our sustenance. It's our emotion. It's
yeah.
it's our escape.
Yeah.
It's our joy. It's our freedom. So food itself.
Yeah.
Those locusts attack everything that was food. I just have in here, which I've already released, is that he did for Pharaoh what he will do for us. Like, that's how we get to see him and feel him and know him. He did for Pharaoh what he will do for us. He will expose and topple every false god and demon. Even though it hurts us to see them fall, he will take over them. I mean, if he does it for Pharaoh, who is hard and stubborn and a pagan god's son, how much more is he doing all of this for his little ones?
Yeah, it's good.
Especially those who apply. Because we're going to get to that. You got to apply.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the next one is darkness. This is crazy. In the scripture, it says darkness that can be felt.
Mm-hmm.
He was attacking the sun god Ra, which is Pharaoh. To me, that meant that he's after sonship. So in the beginning, when I said, you know, what is fathering you, that's more of like what's influencing you in this arena.
Yeah.
This is actual sonship. How many of us have had to stop at darkness to let him deal with sonship? Because ultimately, true sonship is he's killing not only the pagan god over that, but he's killing what births from that.
Mm-hmm.
If he's attacking sonship in you, right? If I'm talking about Egypt being a demonic system over your life, if that's what we're talking about then the way that I see that is that Yahweh is after that demon that has fathered you,
mm-hmm.
but then also the sonship or the son that comes out of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're in darkness, it's not just after what's been fathering you, but he's after what was birthed out of that fathering.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
He's directly attacking Pharaoh himself.
Yeah.
Not just the god over Pharaoh.
It's crazy.
Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Sonship. Light is an aspect of God's character. There is no darkness in him. So that means he has the power to withdraw his presence that creates the void. And how long was the darkness for?
3 days.
To the killing of a firstborn. And I already said this, but going in then to killing of the firstborn, if you aren't a son, meaning if he's attacking sonship, Pharaoh is not a son. He's attacking sonship. The thing he does is that he's basically saying, and the sons that have come from you are illegitimate.
Mm-hmm.
They got to go.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He wants covenant people, not illegitimate people. Make sense? Was that all right?
Yeah.
That was just kind of like what I heard kind of personally with each of them. Are you guys okay to go deeper?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What we just talked about is one layer. They're one and the same, I feel, but this is just a little bit deeper. First, I want to present, I want to take us to Shavuot. And as you guys know, we walk out the counting of the Omer, where we walk through what? Attributes and characteristics of the kingdom. Okay. How many weeks are there? 7. And there's 7 attributes. up until this next three, all of those plagues are dealing with also those seven attributes. Now, the reason why I could say that is because it's not something I've taught on, but I am just going to release it really quick. There is attributes beyond seven. We just don't count them because they're not attributes you can obtain, because the seven attributes of the kingdom are very they're emotional. They're characteristics you can work on. There are three more characteristics of Yahweh that have to do with your consciousness that aren't necessarily obtainable through walking them out or working on them. So what I'm saying is that there are 10 attributes of the kingdom that are associated with the 10 statements of creation, that are associated with the 10 plagues. So I want to go a little bit into that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why I talked about seven and three. The seven plagues are lumped together because the seven attributes are one part of this, and then there's the three plagues that are separated, and those are three that are associated with three attributes. So there's seven and three. When we count the Omer and we are walking out the attributes, what we're doing is we are walking through a process of refinement, because we know that in each of us we have the opportunity to choose to be refined in these attributes, or you can be corrupted in these attributes. You can either be refined in them, or these attributes can become corrupted and perverted. Let me give an example, of, just to remind you of some of the attributes that we've talked about during Shavuot, is Yesod. Yesod is foundation, right? Let me do a different one. Hod. Remember the week of Hod? We walk through Hod. It has to do with splendor. You can be refined in His splendor, or you can pervert splendor. Does that make sense what I'm saying? The reason why we work on these attributes and we walk through them is because these are the areas in our lives that can become perverted, and He's reclaiming these characteristics. It's another way of saying it is it's your process of maturity. Does that make sense? Sanctification, obtaining more of Him. Looking more like Him. It's a practical way of being able to not just pray in your closet, say, you know, let me smell like You, but walking out, how do I smell like You?
Yeah.
Splendor.
Yeah.
Don't let your splendor be perverted. That's how you begin to smell like Me. Does that make sense? These are attributes and characteristics of who He is. Hesed is about love and mercy. So we begin to honor and understand what is love and mercy, and what is the negative attribute that would be perverted in love and mercy. So I'm talking about those attributes that we've already studied during Shavuot.
Okay.
And like I said, we have a choice to refine these characteristics, or we can pervert them. So now, the deeper layer, right? We started from decreating His creation to then realizing there's some demons in my life He's going to deal with. Then He says, you want to be refined? You want to walk in My, you want to walk in My character? Like, this is an does that make sense?
Yeah,
He's not dealing with the demon over Me. He's dealing with Me in this layer. That's why I said those questions that got personal. That's how this led me there, because I was already starting to see a pattern of the demons He was attacking, the gods and the goddesses that He was attacking, I realized are actually influences in my life. So then it became personal. And as soon as it became personal, He began to show me this level of personalization, of a refinement of character within me.
Yeah.
So now it's not just like black and white. This is like the fine tuning.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Okay. I want to remind us again, Egypt is a system, which is a demonic program that's systematically eliminating his people.
Yeah, right.
Egypt.
Right.
Not Bible history, Egypt. Yes. But Egypt right now is a demonic program that is systematically eliminating his people.
Yeah.
Egypt also can be a state of psychological dysfunction. That stops someone from coming into their fulfillment. I was talking about before with the gods and goddesses would be Egypt being a systematic system that's trying to take you out. What we're about to go over is Egypt being a psychological dysfunction within you that is stopping you from walking in your fullness. That's also in Egypt. So when we get passionate about leaving a system, we're not talking about leaving Grace Fellowship.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about Egypt being a psychological dysfunction that is stopping you from being able to operate in your fullness. That is what he has done for me. Had he not delivered me, had he not brought me out of depression, delivered me into a place, I would be stuck in a psychological dysfunction that would stop me from walking in my fullness. Had he not dealt with the God of anxiety. But then to do the work of the attribute within me to come out from under the God of anxiety, to be brought out from under the God of anxiety, to deliver me into a place, to then put me into a place to say, now let's work on the refinement of submission. What have I been submitted to? First, I'm going to deal with the God of anxiety. Then I'm going to deal with the refinement of what you submit to within your body. Guys, there is a blueprint here. If we're dealing with the God of medicine, this is the platform for you to be a actual new creation.
Yeah.
Where you know how to heal yourself.
Yeah.
But it's not just going to be getting rid of the God of diabetes. He's going to deal with the character of what you eat, how you look at things, what you do, how to reverse time. He wants you to operate as a new creation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is so superficial to look at this as a history story,
yeah.
let alone to just say, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. He's going to deal with the demon in my life. That's like the four cups and the promises is to be brought out, to be delivered, to be redeemed. At some point, he had to bring me out from the God of anxiety. He had to deliver me from some things so that I could be redeemed.
Right,
so that I could praise and have intimacy in the proper thing.
Yes.
He wants to shift anxiety into joy. But that comes from the praise after redemption.
Yeah.
Being brought out of anxiety is just the beginning.
Right.
To be redeemed and married to joy.
Come on now.
That's a refinement process.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like to focus on demons. But if we need to, we'll deal with them.
Yeah.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The word Egypt, where I'm getting this from, is the word Egypt. I won't say this right, but it's mitzarim. It's multiple constraints. It's multiple inhibitions. That's Egypt, the word Egypt. So when I'm talking about a system, I'm talking about the system of constraint in your life. I'm talking about the system of inhibition in your life. I want to define this because I thought those are good words, but I want to like define these words. So I defined them. A restraint on expression.
Wow.
That's just Webster's dictionary. That ain't biblical. Egypt is multiple restraints.
Yeah.
The definition of restraint is being restrained in expression. You have a hard time expressing yourself? There's some restraints there.
Yeah.
Or the expression of who he is on the earth.
Yeah.
Egypt is the constraint of that. So anybody that's like, I'm not boasting about freedom. I mean, I'll boast about freedom of anxiety, but there's a bunch of things after my life and a bunch of things that I'm predisposed to. I'm not saying I'm... Any constraint, that's why it's like, even if I find myself, well, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's why there's just joy, because it's like any inhibition. Let me see the definition. The act of hindering of Egypt, the system, is the act of hindering a process.
Mm. That's good.
Egypt, multiple constraints. Definition, slowing or prevention of a process. So not just hindering it, but slowing it down or preventing it altogether.
Yeah.
If that's happening, Egypt.
Yep. Yeah.
The definition of inhibition, it has to do with reaction and function. So if there's restraint in your reaction or restraint in your function, then you're not walking in your fullness. Self-conscious. Unable to act naturally. I mean, this is Webster's dictionary. Unable to act naturally. Now, I'm not talking about being able to, like, say hi. I'm talking about you are a new creation.
Yeah.
There is a system that is telling you to not act naturally.
Yeah.
What is natural is that you are not human.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you have a system that's saying, no, you're human.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nope, you're bound to 24 hours. Nope, you're bound to a 9-to-5. Nope, you're bound to this. Nope, you're bound to predisposed genes. Nope, you're bound to obesity. Bound to...
Yeah.
But you are a new creation. Egypt says, stop the process.
Yep.
Yeah.
Don't freak out about a process. The process is for you to be superhuman. It's fun. Why are we scared of a process? It is to get you to your original intent, which is superhuman.
Yeah.
Egypt is lying to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All that process is going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it's saying, I want to hinder the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am a land of restraint. Talk about freedom. We get comfortable in restraint. But what's freedom?
Yeah.
Right. That's
so good.
It is good. All right. I'm not going to go through all of these. I'm gonna give them out, but I'm not gonna teach all of them, because everything I just said is for each plague. So every character that is to get you to become superhuman, there's a plague that is after that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Let me say this: if we don't confront our own demons, our perverted attributes can manifest in psychological plagues. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about Egypt. If you do not confront your issues, your perverted attributes, if you do not confront those, they will manifest in psychological plagues. Now, let me present this. An attribute of foundation is a lot easier to deal with than the attributes of the higher places. I'll talk about that. There's going to be a difference between darkness and frogs, is what I'm saying. that make sense?
Yeah.
So when I say psychological dysfunction, okay, so does that make sense? If the frogs are pointing to if what I'm talking about is a system of psychological dysfunction, then that means that there is, just like I've been talking about, as a deconstructed creation, there's a greater attribute than other attributes. So psychological dysfunction can get very dangerous. And I'll get into that with darkness. Now remember, when I say dangerous, this should be encouraging, because he's giving us the blueprint of how to walk in his light. I have to expose darkness so that you'll search out his light.
Right.
I'm not saying we're just... Does that make sense? Like, you guys understand like what I'm doing, because I don't mean to be like doomsday.
No.
But I want to give the blueprint of what it is that he's after and what can be ours. Because we've been lied to.
Yes.
So some truth is some truth, but sometimes truth has to be confrontational to be able to receive truth.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Mom.
Yes. Okay, so the attributes, go through them. Malkut, it's the first one. Yesod is the next one. Hod is the next one. Netzach is the next one. Tiferet. Givorah. Hesed. You guys know these words. We do them at Shavuot. They're just Hebrew words too. I'll list these out if you want to go back up to the list. Kingdom. Foundation. Splendor, victory, compassion, strength, love. Okay, these are attributes that we can be refined in, so that we cannot be a part of psychological dysfunction. Okay? So I gave the list of them, but I'm not going to teach on all of them. I don't think. What time is it? Yeah, I'm not going to teach on all of them. But I am going to speak on a couple of them that I felt were significant. I want to talk about frogs, because Yesod is the foundation. Yesod is unity, and Yesod has to do with intimacy. So the second plague has to do with swarms of frogs. Frogs are cold-blooded. They deposit eggs in water. They attach their eggs to water plants. Things have to be damp and cold. Due to this way that they lay their eggs, being cold-blooded, they do not need, there is no parental protection needed. This is representing the word, I have a word for the opposite of unity, or the opposite of foundation, or the opposite of bonding. Plague is getting at is cold intimacy. It's an emotional state of apathy, detachment, and coldness. The inability to have genuine emotional intimacy with another person. See what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
With the refinement.
Yeah.
Of what frogs now mean. Frogs now should be greater than a story of frogs in a land long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Does this make sense what he's doing? If he is coming in to reestablish some things, then he is coming in and bringing utter chaos to that system. What this means is that the system of Egypt, the constraint system of Egypt, the psychological dysfunction of Egypt gives off a culture of cold intimacy,
mm-hmm.
apathy, no genuine connection, cold-blooded. Which means that what he has is the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm pointing out is the perverted attribute. To what is Yesod then? What is foundation? What is unity? Does that make sense what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to talk about the swarm of flies. This is for Nitzach, which is victory. Another word for victory is ambition. So the opposite word for this would be wild ambition. A swarm of devouring beasts. Let me say this. We know that I said that you can either pervert or you can be refined. Ambition is a good thing. What this is representing is if we don't refine this character trait, we know that ambition is probably one of the greatest things that we can have. But if we do not refine it in his character, then our ambitions can turn to devouring beasts.
Mm-hmm.
Our ambitions can turn into a swarm of flies that devour. They crush and destroy the people that we perceive that are standing in our way.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep.
Wild ambition. Maybe three more.
Yeah.
All right, livestock. This is Tiferet, compassion and beauty. How to describe the livestock would be, or at least, I don't want to get too much into this, but just to kind of give some examples of kind of to look at these plagues multidimensionally is what I'm trying to do. You know, this isn't just like a one-way thing. This is just like a way to kind of look at it. But with the livestock, the word epidemic came up. Compassion, which is Tiferet, is definitely a kingdom principle. But the Egyptian culture would use the, so the opposite word for compassion would be sly compassion. Utilizing compassion to be able to one-up someone and put a thumb over their head. And it's slow. It's an epidemic. It's sly, shrewd, and deceitful. It's a seducing quality of compassion used in order to exploit people's weaknesses. I'm describing Egypt's system. Make sense? Hail was the last one that I was going to do, but I think I might do darkness. I'll just touch it. Sorry. Okay, hail.
I want to know.
I know. Hail. This one. This one's a doozy. Hail is with Hesed. And again, this is so amazing because we've already been doing Shavuot looking at, I didn't just attach Hesed with Hail because I thought it was cool. That's just the order of this in the order of the plague. So you just match them up. So Hail, Hesed, love. So the opposite of this, or what the Hail is representing is a frozen love. Now, this is what's interesting. You guys remember that when the hail came, there was fire. So, a frozen love is showing being icy to others with a burning, lustful passion for yourself.
Definitely a doozy.
Say it again. Hail, when you have fire, like a passion, lustful fire for self, you will permeate icy love to others. Meaning, what I'm saying is in that system, the Egyptians only knew an icy love, a love that was based entirely on self-seeking. So that makes sense. I'm talking about Egypt and how Pharaoh operated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and what Yahweh sense. Was after is why I'm describing it this way. He is after that system that is so self-absorbed and exploiting others that he was sending judgments over that system.
Yeah.
Because that system was already operating that way. He was just sending manifested plagues to expose what was going on.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was just a mean God and was like, oh, let me just send hail to ruin everything.
Yeah.
It was already hailing.
Yeah.
He was just manifesting his judgment saying, I am superior to that kind of hail. Then when you attach it to this, he gives you, I haven't even gotten to the good part. He gives you chesed. He teaches us how to love properly outside of self.
That's a good one.
We all right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to teach on darkness, but I do want to talk about darkness. And the reason why is because it's those higher three things. And so since we don't really know, I'll give you the words to them if you want. But we don't go through them during Shavuot. And again, because the first seven are very, you can walk them out. They're very emotional. They're not emotional, but they're attributes that you can work on. You can work on love. The last three are not necessarily, they're more in the conscious mind. They're more the cycle. That's what I meant by the psychological dysfunction is going to affect these. So that's why we work on those attributes to be clear in our mind, is what I'm saying. So the last three is Binah, which is with locusts, Chokmah, which is darkness, and then Keter, which is crown, which was with the death of the firstborn. I'm just giving you those words, but I am going to talk about darkness, because Chokmah is wisdom. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is I gave a word over Pesach, and tonight we're going to be talking about Pesach. And the word was to walk through the double doors with wisdom, engage her, love her.
Yeah.
Read Psalms, honor her, sit with her, be with her, dine with her, love her. She will come to you, sit in her, wisdom. So because of that, Chokmah, wisdom, is attached to darkness. So the word opposite of wisdom would be a locked mind.
Yeah.
To be in darkness would be locked up, a locked mind. As I'm talking about psychological dysfunction, being locked. You do not have the ability to receive revelation.
Yeah.
Wisdom is enlightens. And if you're locked up, if your mind is locked, wisdom can't penetrate darkness. So this culture was stopping the people. Remember when I used the word anguish? They were broken in spirit because they couldn't even breathe.
Yeah.
Wisdom was being stopped. So Yahweh comes in and says, let me show darkness, void. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, now, I don't know if this is necessarily a good part, but I think this is awesome. 10 statements of creation, 10 plagues. What do we receive in the wilderness? He gives us they're each attached on how to walk out all of it. You will serve no other gods. And we fought the law for so long. His instructions are his blueprint of how to walk out all of it. Forever for the ten, I mean, there's more commandments, but the ten commandments that things hinge on, the ketubah, the marriage contract, are the instructions of how to walk out all of that. I mean, the intent of the Father.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And then on top of that, in this Torah portion, they get articles from the Egyptians. Mm-hmm. Jewels, gold, silver. What adorns the tabernacle? The things that you're going to receive in this darkness. The things that you're going to plunder from the lands of dysfunctional, psychological dysfunction. The jewels that you're going to obtain from that place is going to adorn your temple. It's the thing that is on their breastplate.
Yeah.
The Egyptian culture is on display on the priest.
Wow.
That's just in the scripture. I didn't make that up. They use the gold and the silver to adorn the temple. Amen?
Amen.
All right, that's what I have for the play. Gosh. Oh, my watch died. It's 8.
It's probably his line.
Yeah. Okay, well, I wanted to get into Pesach. Are you okay? I'll try to do this quick.
You're good.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it quick, but I'm going to try.
You're fine.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you got nothing out of what I just said, we have the ability to learn to breathe in the depth of what it is that he's showing us.
Yeah.
The mysteries are yours, but only kings can search them out.
Yeah.
So your character needs to be built.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So my title, Pesach, how deep can we go? I think I'm going to go through this first part pretty quick because I really want to get into, we see Pesach in this Torah portion, but we also see the instructions to Pesach. So the first thing that I felt that I wanted to do is, what is Passover? The very last scripture that Sean read, right before the very I am Adonai, it says that it is the Lord's Passover. I understand we celebrate Passover. Like, I understand that. But I want to know, what is Passover? I understand the concept, you know, Passover. But, like, I know that this wasn't written in English. So then it can't actually mean, like, we celebrate that he passed over. I mean, yes, but that has to be not deep.
Yeah.
So, like, that's awesome. It's the Lord's Passover. It's flat. But I want... Tell me what the Lord's Passover is. What is this?
Yeah.
Because I know that Yeshua, HaMashiach, is the Passover.
Yes.
So then I might want to know what Passover is.
Okay.
So that's just how I kind of start with my study. And I'm not saying that I have an answer, but I did get a little deep. Mm-hmm. So first of all, the word is Pesach. All right. We know that he provides the Passover. It's a noun. He provides it as a rescue, meaning the Passover is a rescue. It's also an institution to remember each generation, because it says to remember this every generation. It's also a powerful drama of what's to come. Right, so there's like already three big aspects to this is the Lord's Passover. I mean, one thing I didn't note in here, if you guys noticed, we went from an individual to a people to a congregation.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
Speak to the congregation. We have now become a religious institution. You guys ready to go back? But you can't be a congregation
yeah.
if you're not an individual
right.
who become people, who
right.
become a nation.
Yeah.
To carry, when I say religious, I'm not talking about man-made rules. I'm talking about his governance
yeah.
in a kingdom
yeah.
that is beyond what we see and know. When I say religious institution. But that this is the Lord's Passover, okay? So I just decided to just dive into the word Pesach. So it's H6453. The Strong's Concordant. It's a sacrifice of Passover, okay? It involves communion, a communion meal, a peace. It's an animal victim of the Passover. It's also a festival. So like I said, it is a rescue, it is a feast, and it is an animal. We know this, but here's what's interesting. This word gets really weird. So the root of this word, this is going to be normal, this part's not weird. The root of this word is to skip over. The root of this word means to spare, pass, spring over. Hop, leap, jump. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why English probably called it Passover, because it means those things. But it also means to halt, to limp and be lame. This is why you can't study making the scriptures fit your theology. Because
yeah.
you will get jacked up.
Yeah.
What do you mean? The lame festival? The limping sacrifice? But at first glance, you're like, it means halt, stop. Where's this going? All right. I want to read. Can someone, will you read? Will you pull up 1 Kings 18:21? I don't know how I'm going to do this. It's all a big jumbled mess, so you're just going to have to fix your notes. Okay? Because there's words in the Old Testament that uses Pesach that doesn't have anything to do with Pesach. That's why it means limp. We're going to read some of them. And I think they're significant, so that's why I'm talking about it. Because if the Torah is reading us, then there's probably something to this, and it's just beyond a festival.
Yeah.
1 Kings 18:21.
I'm going to use this app. It doesn't have to search it.
Wait, well, don't search it. Look it up. 1 Kings.
Oh.
Unless somebody has it. Anybody had it? Somebody want to read it? Eric, go ahead and read it. 1 Kings 18:21.
Okay, I just had it for you. Then Elijah approached all the people and said, "How long will you waver between two opinions? Adonai is God, follow him, but if Baal is, follow him."
Okay, stop. How long will you Pesach between two opinions? That's that word. How long will you limp between two places? How long will you jump between two opinions? How long will you be lame in two opinions? Leviticus 21:18. It's talking about literally being crippled. Limp, as in a wound. So there's these times where Pesach is being used in a completely different context than the Passover lamb. So does this mean that Pesach is you stand still or you leap? I mean, that's what's happening to me as I'm studying this. I've got this question: do I stand still or do I leap? To me, this is I'm seeing death versus life. There's a choice, and we have one. Mm-hmm. Firmly choose. He is serious about idolatry. Mm-hmm. So what I'm starting to gather from this is that the rescue is, how long are you going to limp between two places?
Yeah.
How long are you going to be Egyptian and Israel? How long are you going to serve two things? Firmly choose, because he's serious about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I have this written down here, so I'm just going to read it. There, no blood will cut it. Meaning at this point, it does not matter what bloodline you come from. Yes, he is after the Israelites, but we know a mixed multitude leaves. He gives the strategy to everyone in the land. He, like I said, he doesn't go, hey, Israel. He says, Moshe, tell Pharaoh.
Yeah.
So there's no blood at this point cuts it except for the lamb. Okay. In Hebrew, when you have two opposing, to me, those definitions are opposing. Leap, halt. Right? Like stand still, go. What is happening here? What does limping and wounding mean in Leviticus? What does 1 Kings mean when it says, how long are you going to jump around, toss to and fro, essentially? There's a word picture that comes with the Hebrew that helps to understand the definition. The word picture here is, I don't want to say that one. It's a progression. Hop on one leg. One way to talk about this is the Messiah. What was the prophecy in Genesis 3? It's a description of what he became so that you wouldn't have to. It's an exchange of being halted to leap. The wounded, he became wounded that you may be saved. You can't have Pesach and have all the good.
Yeah.
In the word itself, you can't have just all rescue. Yeah. Rescue from what? Being lame. Mm. In one word. Hebrew is so beautiful. Let it work through you. Okay? But there's more to this. This the word picture that comes with Pesach. That's so good. Is Yod-Heh Vav-Heh hopping or hovering, fluttering over homes. Not a passed over, yes, but in English it's so superficial. There was a fluttering or a hovering over the homes. Because it's interesting when you read about Pesach, the death angel also passed over.
Yeah.
So did he pass over? Or did the death angel pass over? What was standing guard? See the difference?
Yeah.
You can look at it either way. He passed over or he stood firm. Same result.
Yeah.
They're not in opposition. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Wait.
What? The word Pesach means stand firm, halt, stand still, but also means leap. So in the story of Pesach, the death angel passes over. So I'm just saying, however you look at it, he was standing guard. They're not in opposition.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The death angel.
Oh.
So fluttering or hovering over, here we are back at Genesis. Spirit hovered over what was void. This will get you to read scriptures about eagle's wings very differently when you understand the word Pesach, the fluttering, the hopping. Not like it's not a human, it's not a human, like, hopping. It's a spirit, it's a frequency, it's a hovering, it's a fluttering over, okay? He protects by hovering and fluttering or hopping around them, forming an impenetrable fortress of protection. That's Pesach. That's that word. That's the word picture. Another way of looking at the two different sides of the word is that his light both judges and delivers. I mean, he set the death angel. His word both delivers and protects. Are you guys all right?
Yeah.
Just want to dive into that word. If this is the Lord's Pesach,
yeah.
I want to know what that means. And this is just, again, I don't even know the fullness, but it's just a little bit of it. The other thing is the actual Hebrew is Pesach. So this is another aspect. It actually means the mouth speaks. Part of Pesach is it says you have to tell the narrative. You have to talk, you have to tell it. Telling the narrative transforms internal ideas into reality. Telling the narrative transforms internal ideas into reality. He wants you to talk. Pesach. The mouth speaks. So, Pesach is a little bit deeper. If you got nothing out of that, it's a little bit deeper than he passed over. Because you've got to understand this, because then you know, which I'm going to get into, what happens when you apply the blood. He doesn't pass over you and then move on. He is fluttering over your home. When he sees the blood, he is a fortress, an impenetrable fortress of fluttering, hovering wings of protection. Hopping. That's a God that we, that's Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. We've got to get out of our minds of a human jumping around. Because the opposite of jumping around in 1 Kings is how long are you going to hop back and forth? Yahweh is not hopping back and forth.
Right. Yeah.
He is hovering over and standing guard over his blood.
Yeah.
All right. I think I kind of already said that. My point is go beyond Passover. He doesn't pass over the blood. To save or to protect doesn't mean he just to pay the blood doesn't make sense. So there's got to be more to it. It's an act. I am action. It's an active role in protecting them by unleashing a destructive angel and passing over. Like I said, Passover is not a great translation, so we say Pesach. There's a double play on word, just like ear. An ear of corn. That's what I'm getting at with Pesach. But we don't know that in the Hebrew. We just know Pesach.
Yeah.
But we know that in English, that ear and ear can mean two different things. That's all I'm saying, is Pesach means a couple of things. Okay? All right. We're doing that anyways. I'm getting through this part, because this is the best part, I think. Okay, actual Passover. Actual Pesach. I want us to start using Pesach, not Passover. In the scripture, I'm gonna go through a couple of things that were in the scripture. It says, not a dog will bark at the children of Israel. In the midst of absolute, utter destruction, it says the cries the next morning. It talks about the sound. And he says, not a dog will bark at them. I can go down a road on that one. But what I hear is that what he's giving is tranquility. I don't know if any of us have dealt with some barking dogs. I'm not talking about the natural. I mean in the spirit. Messing around. Trying to have a voice. And he says, not even a dog. Full tranquility in the midst of this. In the midst of this plague. In the midst of him dealing with this, tranquility. It's just a side note. I have it down, so I'm just going to say it. Up until this point, Pharaoh had the ability to blame Moshe and God for all of this. It's kind of like a politician. I ain't doing it. But part of that scripture, what that means is not a dog will bark, is Yahweh saying at some point the people are going to know this is your fault. This isn't mine. And you see it with the people who said get out and gave them their stuff. The Egyptians were given the ability to see what the situation really was. if there was any confusion up until that point. Okay, that was just kind of a side note. All right, I want to get into the instructions. Why did you guys move the clock behind me? I'm sorry. I've taught on this before, but the beginning of these instructions, it says the beginning of the month. I don't need to necessarily teach on that. We've talked about that. But what I do want to say in the midst of this is that he is basically saying a new beginning. He's saying everything changes, even the times. Everything changes. When he says that this is going to be the first for you, everything changes. That's what he's saying to them. From this point forward, everything changes. Now, in the instructions, it says, it is such a beautiful thing to rehearse his feasts because it gives us more understanding of what came next, right? That's what I want to touch on. We know the instructions, but I want to touch on what it means for us. Every family had to get a lamb. Not the nation, every family. Go back to what he said in the beginning. No longer can it come from a pastor. Every family, while a whole people, every family needed a lamb. The lamb is both corporate and individual. What I'm saying is that the family next door couldn't say, well, they'll do it.
Yeah.
Jacob?
Right, right.
What do you just release on Wednesday? If Gabi eats the lamb, I'm good.
Right.
Yahweh said every family. You guys good?
Yeah.
It says you're gonna pick out a lamb and you're gonna bring them into your house for 4 days. Now, most likely, the lamb came from their own flock to begin with, so they already knew the lamb. But then brought the lamb in for 4 days. The lamb actually lives with the family. I have taught on this before. The lamb actually lives with the family. The reason for that is because, you guys remember what the reason for that is?
Yeah.
The sacrifice had to be perfect. Which means cortisol levels within the lamb had to be lowered. They could not be freaking out. They could not sacrifice a lamb in the midst of chaos. The lamb had to be brought to a place of family so that they would not have been clean if they had high levels of cortisol. So a level of intimacy came over the lamb. They actually would lock eyes with the lamb so that when the slaughtering would happen, they knew who to lock eyes onto. It will demolish your thought process that you receive everything after the blood. He was already chosen. He was already received. He was brought to a place of intimacy. Eyes are locked on. How do you think he got through that? He locked on to John. You don't, well, I need this to happen before I can have intimacy. It hadn't even happened yet. Get the lamb. He became part of the family because the lamb was becoming precious. The lamb had to be without blemish, had to be perfect. He is perfected within our homes. Okay. Before they ate, the blood had to be applied. V before they ate, the blood had to be applied. They had to do something with the blood. They had to choose to put the blood on the doorpost. Now, if you understand, when the lamb was slain, the only thing that Yahweh required for himself was the blood. The blood represents vertical. The rest of him, the rest of the lamb, was eaten by you. The only thing that Yahweh required was the rest of who he is was eaten laterally, experienced laterally to you. Part of the doorpost, I would suspect, had a huge part of remembrance. There's no instructions that said that they washed it the next day. I'm pretty sure if you paint blood on your doorpost, it's going to stay. Now, this is where it gets a little intense. If it wasn't intense already. I'm sorry. The lamb was not killed to be looked at. The lamb was not killed to be looked at, but to be eaten. The lamb was not killed to be talked about. The lamb was not killed to be thought about, but to be fed upon. Absolutely consumed. John 6:53, when all of the disciples pretty much walked away, was when he said, "Eat me. Eat my flesh." He did not die so you could think about him once in a while. He did not die so you could talk about him. He died so you could eat him, consume him, put him inside of you. Now, this is good. None shall remain. None of him shall remain. The next day, none of him shall remain the next day. You eat it all and you eat it now. You don't get to save a little bit of him for later, or I'll get to that later. You consume him now. All of it. You take it all then. You do not store up some for later. We take all of it, not parts. Well, I only want that part of it. I only want to eat that part. As a family, you eat all parts, all of it. And then you eat with readiness, because once you eat, it's time to go. Deliverance will be immediate. Gird your loins. As soon as you consume all of it, it is immediate. You will go. Amen.
Obviously, Yahweh is getting after and stirring a lot in what was released. And there's something he wants to do right now, and I'm not exactly sure what it is, but when I hope that we have taken or continue to take the opportunity to draw upon what was released, because in what was released, it made it apparent to us in the realm where we can see tonight, that deep well of joy that comes from being liberated from suffering. And when she talks about joy, it's kind of weird when you think about joy, but what I feel like is being made clear tonight in receiving the impartation of what was released is that there's an authority that comes with joy. When somebody is genuinely joyful, there's authority behind it. Like, you cannot take somebody's joy. When it's the joy of the Lord, you cannot take it, because there's authority behind it. And I say that because as we listen to the passion that Mom just conveyed his heart with, that's from a place of authoritative joy that comes from walking out the process to the fullest extent of being liberated from oppression and suffering. If you shortchange or you resist, like she talked about, if you resist that process, that is the extent to which you will have authority and joy. You will have none. You have to question any semblance or facade of joy that you have, because there is no authority behind it. If you resist his deliverance, his redemption, the entire process that he wants to take you through. And it goes back to what I said earlier about being a victim and being subject to things. And I want to be, this is what we need to do to just prophetically act on tonight. And I want you guys to think about this. If you have, Yahweh wants to reclaim some things right now and snap things into order right now. So I want you to think about this, not too hard when I ask you this question. If you have, if you can honestly just think to yourself right now, don't lie to yourself. If you can think to yourself that there have been things that I have been subject to, that I have been a victim of through oppression or through suffering, don't think too hard about this. If there are things that you have suffered from, I want you to stand up right now. And I'll stand up, because there's things that I've claimed to be a victim to. Now, in standing up, right, I am is action. So you are taking action right now. As a house, we're taking action, that we have suffered things. And when we talk about victimhood, we're not saying you can never be a victim. You can genuinely be victimized. What makes a victimhood complex or a bondage of victimhood is what you do about that. Okay? So there is something very important that she talked about that I feel like Yahweh wants to activate tonight, and that is the fact that when they left, when they were sent forth, they were sent forth adorned with gold and silver. I just want to be blunt about this, because we've exited a system literally, but we know about the bondage that we still have to deal with. And that's what Yahweh wants to deal with right now as we go into what freedom is in what she was referring to in the next Torah portion. The things that we have suffered, and I'm dealing with victimhood. The things that we have suffered, we have left adornments of gold and silver sitting on the table.
Yeah.
By his design, they exited the system and they plundered the gold and silver from their captors. And we have focused on, out of a place of suffering or oppression, we have chosen to focus and remanufacture and rebuild oppression and suffering so that we can continue to be victims, not take ownership, not take responsibility, not do the hard work of going through the process of deliverance, to fully have a full authority of joy on the other side, which is a well that she presented that we can now draw from. Because if we focus on those things and we remanufacture those things and we raise our oppression and our suffering and are being subject to from the dead, if we continue to uphold that structure, then we leave the adornments of gold and silver that he blessed us with, exiting our slavery, you have left it on the table. Now this is what Yahweh's snapping into place. I want you to think about that process, and I want you to pledge the blessing of exiting that system, and that there is gold and silver that Yahweh is bringing you back to. He's not bringing you back to your slavery. He's just making it apparent to you that through your slavery, you have adornments to place on your dwelling. When you talk about the Holocaust and you talk to people that have gone through the Holocaust, the Shoah, the think about the suffering and the system that a whole nation was subject to. And many people, when they talk about that, they say, would you take revenge? What is the best revenge? And they come with an authority of joy, and they say, the best revenge is my life now, that I would be happy, living a happy life, full of joy, right now. And the authority behind that joy, nobody can take that from them. That is an example of somebody who exited a system, who was redeemed and created new out of a system of bondage. And they have an authority of joy, of happiness, that even that system of modern day oppression could not rob from them. Nobody could convince them to take vengeance on the people that perpetrated that on them. So think about your suffering, the thing that you have chosen to say, I was a victim of that. I don't take full ownership because I was subject to that. Think about that. Come on, this is the wealth.
There's
gold and silver, and Yahweh is presenting it to you. You didn't see it. We didn't see it. The suffering we went through, we, instead of focusing on exiting and picking up the gold and the silver, we continued to focus and uphold the structure of, look what they did to me. This is what I was subject to. This is why I can't do this. This is why my life doesn't amount to this. So whatever that gold and silver is, ask Yahweh, what are those adornments that I have not picked up as I exited my suffering? Ask him. All you have to do is ask. You could have been genuinely victimized. You could have been raped. You could have been robbed from. You could have been stolen from. You could have been assaulted. But out of that suffering, There's adornments because he's the one bringing you out. But yet he will give us that in his grace, not even about us, but he'll give it. Victimhood and exchange it for those adornments that he gave us. Of suffering. We don't know the full extent of what everybody in this room has suffered. We have no idea. You may have some idea, but you don't know the full extent. I hear my daughter Rebecca over there laughing. The joy, that well of joy that she's tapping into, there's authority in it. And I don't know all of what she suffered, but I do know some of what she suffered has been tremendous and unimaginable and unthinkable. But there's adornments in that, out of his grace. Come on. Man, his yoke is easy. They're on the table, you ask him what are those things, and he'll tell you what it is. You take as much time as you need. Continue to engage that. It's his grace in showing you those things when you begin to operate in a way of you can endure suffering and you can fully lean into the process of deliverance and redemption and fully eating of him, that allows you to endure suffering to a level that you don't walk out a victim, but you walk out the authority of joy, adorned in things that you would only be adorned in because of the suffering that you endure.
Yeah.
And that's how you get to a place, right? You fully lean into the liberation to where you have an authority of joy that by itself fully liberates other people. Talk about that spectrum of like, we're just trying to deal with discomfort. Like, we need to get beyond trying to wrestle with discomfort to where we can endure the suffering and take our adornments on our way out. Amen. To where we don't want vengeance. We just want the joy of the Lord in our life. Amen.
Up here because I want us to engage that, and if you need more time, I would encourage you to get in the water. I don't know if any of this is gonna work. If you need a first fruit that looks different than what you've known, I would be sewing into that. This is your opportunity to dive into all that's been released, the joy that's untapped, what she carries. Like, I would encourage you to stop. to sow into that and then engage Mim, knowing that everything that was released, like we were given three layers deep into something that we haven't known, into a whole nother dimension, and to know that we, like, this is just the first teaching of this new year and what he's having us step into, there's opportunity in that. And so to take the place of stepping out and no longer choosing to be a victim to something, but going three layers deeper to keep going and to keep engaging and to dive deeper and to continue to relish in the unknown of everything that Yahweh's taking us into. So if you need to find money, if you need to borrow money, if you need to just dunk your head in the water so that you can get a piece of it.
There.
Mom will get you.
I dare you to sow.
But I would find something to trade and to sow into as a first fruit.
Once you do that, we'll converge over there. Once you guys get your elements, just go ahead and going off of the word, we're going to make sure we
don't. All right, you guys, before we leave tonight, before we end our evening, we're going to hear from Zoe, who carried Remy this week.
Brooke, well, first of all, I basically don't need to share anything because Nanda just said it all.
That's what you were going to say?
Yeah, definitely. That's exactly what I was going to say. Okay, so this week with Remy, continuing in kind of what Rebecca was saying last week about the things that you picked, what was really being pressed in me was death. So, death is easy because it expects nothing from you yet takes everything. In a system that honors death more than life, because it's a justification for pain and for not working through it, it's ignoring what's around you. I let myself be a victim to death. I was carrying the weight I was not designed for, was death. I was designed to carry life. Once you pick something up for so long, it's hard to remember that you have the power to put it down.
Yeah.
You have to put it back. You have to pick it back up. I am not subject to it. I will now choose to not pick up death for the next. Remy was very light because I wasn't picking up death anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I found joy. I found joy in motherhood. I was excited to have a future. Because I didn't think I would have one. I didn't plan to live past 19, so I found no point in learning how to mother because I wasn't going to be alive for it. And now I'm getting to learn what the press looks like in life.
Amen.
That's it.
That's it.
I'll just say one thing. That's the first time that's happened. And how joyful does that make the Father's heart to see nothing left on the table?
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. All right.
It's good.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.
We fully enjoyed tonight.